It's good to see everyone this evening. As you can tell from the screen, we're going to begin in just a few minutes in the 16th chapter. My handy notes from Grant say that on Sunday we'll begin chapter, assuming that I do my part tonight, we'll begin chapter 19 through 21 Sunday and chapters 22 through 24 of 1 Samuel next Wednesday. As you recall, our last class, we briefly reviewed what we'd studied so far in 1 Samuel, saying that we'd met Eli and his sons, we'd met Samuel and his parents, we'd studied the Philistines' capture and return of the Ark of the Covenant. They didn't seem to enjoy having it very much. We've seen the people request a king so that they could be like the nations round about them, and Samuel told them that there would be consequences to that choice, and they would come to regret that choice. Saul is chosen as king, and as Rose noted Sunday morning, he began rather humbly, but he changed. In chapters 13 to 15, we saw that Saul was campaigning against the Philistines, and sadly, in chapter 13, he offered a presumptuous sacrifice and was rebuked by Samuel. Despite Saul's excuses, Samuel tells Saul, "You have acted foolishly. And secondly, you have not kept the commandment of the Lord your God, which he commanded you. For now the Lord would have established your kingdom over Israel forever." Instead, Samuel says to Saul, "But now your kingdom shall not endure. The Lord has sought out for himself a man after his own heart, and the Lord has appointed him as ruler over his people because you have not kept what the Lord commanded you." Now, of course, that's David, and we're going to meet up with David tonight. In chapter 14, we saw Jonathan's efforts in attacking the Philistines result in defeating the Philistines. At the same time, Saul was focused on his own wants and not on the people and made a rash vow that if anyone ate before the Philistines were defeated, they would be killed. His son Jonathan does not know this and eats some honey. When Saul finds out and is prepared to kill Jonathan, the people appropriately acknowledge Jonathan's efforts and they save him. In chapter 15, Saul disobeys God's instructions to destroy all the Amalekites, man, woman, child, and an animal. He spares the Amalek king Agag, and some of the choice livestock. That goes against God's instructions in 1 Samuel 15, 2 through 3, and what God said in Exodus 17 and Deuteronomy 25. As a result of Saul's sinfulness, Samuel tells Saul that God has rejected you from being king. And Samuel personally executes King Agag. We hear a certain passage from Ecclesiastes quoted often. I think Doug used it on Sunday. If not Sunday, perhaps it was last night, Ecclesiastes 12:13. The conclusion when all has been heard is fear God and keep his commandments, because this applies to every person. Saul should have paid attention to that type thought. Now tonight, we're going to look at 1 Samuel 16, 17, and 18. In chapter 16, Samuel go to Bethlehem and anoint David. In 17, we meet Goliath, and David will defeat and kill him. In chapter 18, we see Jonathan and David form a close bond. Saul becomes jealous of David and plots to have David marry his daughter as he plans to have David killed. So, beginning with the 16th chapter, the first five verses. Any comments first over that quick review of the first 15 chapters? In the first five verses of the 16th chapter, God now tells Samuel to quit grieving over God's rejection of Saul. Because Samuel had been close to Saul. He was very disappointed in Saul, and he was grieving over God's rejection of Saul. And God tells him to go about 5 miles south of Jerusalem to Bethlehem and anoint the man who will be the next king. Because Samuel, as you see there in verse 2, "But Samuel said, 'How can I go? When Saul hears of it, he will kill me. Because Samuel fears for his life, since Saul is still king and can execute his enemies, God tells him to take a heifer to use as a sacrifice. God tells him to invite Jesse to the sacrifice, and God will provide him instructions on what to do. As we go to verses 6 through 13, apparently after the public sacrifice, Samuel goes to the house of Jesse to partake of the sacrificial meal. Samuel looks at each of Jesse's sons as they enter the room, but God tells Samuel to not look at the outward appearance because the Lord looks at the heart. Verse 7, but the Lord said to Samuel, do not look at his appearance or at the height of his stature, because I've rejected him. For God sees not as man sees, for man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. That's a great lesson for us today, isn't it? Finally, Jesse's brothers have passed by Samuel. God has not selected any of them. Finally, Jesse's youngest son, David, arrives there in verse 11. And he said, there remains yet the youngest, and behold, he is tending the sheep. Then Samuel said to Jesse, send and bring him, for we will not sit down until he comes here. So Samuel and Jesse wait for David to appear. And David arrives. He's handsome. God tells Samuel to anoint him, and he does. And look what happens. The Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon David from that day forward. And Samuel arose and went home. So, because of Saul's choices and Saul's actions and disregard for God's instructions, we now have someone else to be anointed as a king. And will take office at a date to be in the future. In verses 14 to 23, the same spirit which came upon David seems to have left Saul. Saul's mental state is beginning to deteriorate. It says in verse 14, now the spirit of the Lord departed from Saul, and an evil spirit from the Lord terrorized him. I think that means that God allowed an evil spirit to terrorize Saul. The servants suggest music might help, and Saul says, find someone. The suggestion is made because he wants somebody who can play well and bring him to me. And one of the young men said, behold, I've seen a son of Jesse, the Bethlehemite, who is a skilled musician, a mighty man of valor, a warrior. One prudent in speech and a handsome man, and the Lord's with him. Thinking back to 1 Samuel 8, where Samuel says a king will take people to serve him, here we see that Saul is sending a draft notice, if you will, to Jesse, demanding David be sent to Saul. So in verse 19, Saul sent messengers to Jesse and said, send me your son who is with the flock. Jesse sends David along with gifts, while David's main function seems to be to play his harp. He also becomes Saul's armor bearer. Verse 23 says, so David says David's harp playing would cause the evil spirit to temporarily leave Saul. We were talking before class about David being a farm boy. And Andy Ken said something about lifting some of this armor that Saul is going to turn over to David. And, you know, these people that are outdoors a lot, caring for the flocks and so on in that day and time, must have been rather strong as well. Any comments through these first verses? Go right back and ask. I don't know. But he's a young man. He's considered a youth by his brothers. In a few verses from now, sometime in the 111 verses we're covering tonight, one of the older brothers looks down upon him and thinks he has no place at the battlefield, that he's avoiding his responsibilities by being at the battlefield and is just looking around. So he's young enough that the brothers aren't respecting him a great deal. I agree. And that, I think, reflects what he tells Saul shortly when he says, "I've killed the lion and I've killed the bear." I think the scripture is depicting him properly, but I don't know his age. I don't know his age. Anybody else? Where are we? In the 17th chapter, now the Philistines gathered their armies for battle. Doesn't that sound familiar? And they were gathered at Soco, which belongs to Judah, and they camped between Soco and Azekah in that area. And Saul and the men of Israel were gathered and camped in the valley of Elah and drew up in battle array to encounter the Philistines. And the Philistines stood on the mountain on one side while Israel stood on the mountain on the other side with a valley between them. As we begin looking at the 17th chapter, once again, we see the Philistines gather to attack Israel. Doesn't that sound common? They're in Judah, in the valley of Elah, about 14 miles west of Bethlehem. You know, Jerusalem is still a little bit to the east of this, a little bit north of Bethlehem, with the Philistines on one side of the valley and Israelites on the other side of the valley. So you come to the fourth verse. Then a champion came out from the armies of the Philistines named Goliath from Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. He had a bronze helmet on his head, and he was clothed with scale armor, which weighed 5,000 shekels of bronze. He also had bronze greaves on his legs and a bronze javelin slung between his shoulders. The shaft of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and the head of his spear weighed 600 shekels of iron. His shield carrier also walked before him. He stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel and said to them, "Why do you come out to draw up in battle array? Am I not the Philistine, and you servants of Saul? Choose a man for yourselves and let him come down to me. If he's able to fight with me and kill me, then we will become your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then you shall become our servants and serve us." Again the Philistine said, "I defy the ranks of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together." When Saul and all Israel heard these words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. Each day, the Philistines would send out Goliath of Gath, a descendant of a race of tall people. He was huge. It's thought 6 cubits and a span. If a cubit is 18 inches, that's over 9 feet. 9 feet is about, if you can go up to about where the top of the ruler is, from the floor where I'm standing, that's about 9 feet. And if you don't understand that example, go to room 3, first door on the right. As you go into the hallway, open the door and look from the floor to the ceiling. Bruce and I measured that yesterday at 9 feet 4 inches. That's about how tall the estimate is for Goliath. I'm only 5'7", 5'8". He's over 9 feet. Big man. The heavily armored man was so strong that one commentator says Goliath's armor weighed about 125 pounds. That's what he interpreted 5,000 shekels to be. And the head of the spear, not just that beam on which the spear head was attached, but the head of the spear weighed about 15 pounds, 600 shekels. Goliath would come out. he would taunt these Israelites by challenging the Israelites to send out their best man. If that man can defeat Goliath, the Philistines would submit to the Israelites. If Goliath wins the fight, Israel must serve the Philistines. Appropriately, I think, Saul and all of Israel were scared because they weren't remembering who could be on their side. In verse 12 through 16, it seems David's back home. Three brothers, Jesse had eight sons, but in verse 13 it says three older sons of Jesse had gone out to the battle with Saul. David is going back and forth between home and the army. As this happens, David is going to hear what Goliath has to say. And notice in verse 16, the Philistine came forward morning and evening for 40 days and took his stand challenging Israel. In verses 17 to 19, then Jesse said to David, "Take now for your brothers an ephah of this roasted grain and 10 loaves and run to the camp to your brothers." Going to have to make sure his brothers are well fed. "Bring also these 10 cuts of cheese to the commander of their 1,000 and look into the welfare of your brothers and bring back news of them. For Saul and they and all the men of Israel are in the valley of Elah fighting the Philistines." So that's what David's going to do. The armies of Israel and Philistines are squaring off, facing off. He tells his son to go to the valley, take food to his brothers and to their commander, and bring back news. In verse 20, "So David arose early in the morning and left the flock with a keeper." He knew his responsibilities and wanted to make sure that the flock was covered. "Took supplies, went as Jesse had commanded, came to the circle of the camp, stored the goods that he had brought with him, and then goes and looks for his brothers. He hears Goliath shouting, 'Behold, the champion, the Philistine,' in verse 23, 'from Gath, named Goliath, was coming up from the army of the Philistines,' and he spoke these same words, and David heard him." There's his daily challenge. "When all the men of Israel," in verse 24 and 25, "saw the man, they fled from him and were greatly afraid. The men of Israel said, 'Have you seen this man who's coming up? Surely he's coming up to defy Israel. And it will be that the king will," oh my, what is the king going to do? "One, enrich the man who kills him with great riches. Two, will give him his daughter. And three, make his father's house free in Israel." The scared men of Israel say the king will make wealthy the man who kills Goliath, will allow him to marry his daughter, be a son-in-law of the king, and his father's house won't have to pay taxes. Sounds like a pretty good deal, but remember who they're facing, a 9-foot warrior that is extremely large, extremely strong, and has to be very capable. But what happens in verse 26? "Then David spoke to the men who were standing by him, saying, 'Well, what will be done for the man who kills this Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should taunt the armies of the living God?' The people answered him in accord with this word, saying, 'Thus it will be done for the man who kills him.'" So I think in verse 26 and 27, David's verifying what he's heard. He wants to know, now, are you sure there's going to be that great of a reward for whoever kills Goliath? And the people say, yes, it's a sure thing. So in verse 28, Eliab, his oldest brother, heard when he spoke to the men. And Eliab's anger burned against David. And he said, "Why have you come down? And with whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know your insolence and the wickedness of your heart, for you've come down in order to see the battle." I don't have an older brother, but I can imagine the way that conversation went. Maybe some of you do. I am an older brother, so I think I can imagine how that conversation may have gone toward my younger brother. But David said, "What have I done now? Was it not just a question?" Then he turned away from him to another and said the same thing, and the people answered the same thing as before. David's older brother hears David and angrily accuses David of abandoning his responsibilities at home just to come and look in on the battle. David's response is that of all typical younger brothers. "Look, I'm just asking a question." Well, when the words which David spoke were heard, they told them to Saul, and he sent for him. In these verses, we're going to see Saul reacts. David said to Saul, "Let no man's heart fall on account of him. Your servant will go out and fight with the Philistine." Then Saul said to David, "You're not able to go against the Philistine to fight with him. You are but a youth, Sherry." So he still must be young. "But a youth, while he has been a warrior from his youth." So Goliath's been fighting battles a long time, and David's still a youth. But look what David says. "Your servant was tending his father's sheep. When a lion or bear came and took a lamb, I went out after him, attacked him, rescued him from his mouth. When he rose up against me, I seized him by the beard, struck him, and killed him. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them." And David said, "The Lord, who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine." And Saul said, "Go, and may the Lord be with you." In these verses, Saul begins by scoffing at David and his abilities. David immediately defends his fighting credentials, saying that when his father's flock was threatened, lion, bear, didn't matter, David killed them both. And Goliath, this uncircumcised Philistine, will be like one of them. Furthermore, it's not just going to be David's ability that brings about this result, is it? What does David say? "The Lord who delivered me will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine." We need to rely on God for confidence today, don't we? David was relying on God. We can do the same thing. So Saul says, "Go, may the Lord be with you." I've covered a lot of verses. Any comments to hear? When Saul, in verse 8, clothed David with his garments and put a bronze helmet on his head and he clothed him with armor, it wasn't going to work, was it? To prepare David for battle against this giant, Saul offers him his armor, helmet, weapons. David's uncomfortable. He removes this armor. He had never tested these weapons and armor in battle. He decides to use what he knew best, knows best. He took his shepherd's stick to help him get down the mountain slope. Because remember, they're on either side of a valley. Finds 5 smooth stones from the brook, which he places in his pouch. Takes his sling and goes to find Goliath. When you consider the sling, a sling stone was held in a pouch with cords attached at opposite ends. The sling was whirled over the head until one end was suddenly released in the hands of one who was proficient. It could give quite a good result. As you look at verses 41 through 47, and we'll see more verses in just a second to get to 47. Goliath sees David and speaks to him contemptuously as he tries to intimidate David because of his youth and lack of weapons and lack of experience. He even curses David in the name of his Philistine pagan gods, and he increases his intimidating remarks as he threatens David by saying he will feed David's dead body to birds of the sky and beasts of the field. Okay, this is a 9-foot giant, and David's not 9 feet. But what did David say? He said, "The Lord will be with me." So David responds to the Philistine, "You come to me with a sword, a spear, and a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have taunted. This day the Lord will deliver you up into my hands, and I will strike you down and remove your head from you. The battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands." Pretty strong words. Then it happened when the Philistine rose and came and drew near to meet David. David ran quickly toward the battle line to meet the Philistine, and he put his hand in his bag and took from it a stone and slung it. Remember, David had defeated the paw of the lion and the bear, and he's going to deliver the giant into David's hands as well. And also remember that in Judges, the 20th chapter, we read a passage. Out of all these people of Benjamin, 700 choice men were left-handed. Each one could sling a stone at a hare and not miss. My point is, the ability to use a sling could be developed very well, and David did not miss. Then it happened when the Philistine rose and came near. David used that sling. As we look here at the two examples or illustrations at the bottom of the slide, the sling was attached to one hand on one side. The stone was placed in the pouch. It was slung, either underhanded, overhanded, I don't know. But the person with the ability to use this could create quite a bit of force when he used it. He let go of the untied side, and the stone went straight toward Goliath. It struck the Philistine on his forehead. It sank into his forehead, so they fell on his face to the ground. David didn't miss. Thus, in verses 50 to 54, David killed Goliath with a sling and a stone and had no need of a sword to do so. Verses 51 to 54 tell us that David took Goliath's sword, cuts off Goliath's head. This scares the Philistine army, and they run back to Philistia. The men of Israel and Judah chase them to Gath as far as Ekron, and on toward Ekron. The Israelites plunder the Philistines' camps. As you look at the map, you can see the scale at the bottom. I told you the other day that Israel at this time was about 30% the size of the Commonwealth of Kentucky. So, you know, it's not massive distances. Even though the path out of the valley was winding, the total distance that they had to cover wasn't all that huge. And the passage closes by saying David took the Philistine's head and brought it to Jerusalem, put the weapons in his tent. As the chapter winds toward a finish, we see a conversation between Saul and Abner, where he wants to know the name of David's father. Perhaps Saul just doesn't remember hearing it in the past, but perhaps Saul also remembers his commitment for those three things that were promised to the one who kills the giant. If David is successful, he needs to know what David's father's name is, because that house will be free of tax obligations, according to verse 25. In verse 58, David says, "I'm a son of Jesse the Bethlehemite." He's proud of his daddy. Any comments on chapter 17? Good thought, Rose. That's two classes. Good thoughts from Rose. I think that I would have been scared in my boots unless I'd been like David and said, the Lord will be with me. Now, in the 18th chapter, as we begin, we've just studied David's victory over Goliath, and it proved he was a worthy warrior. From this point, his fortunes continue to rise for a period of time as Saul declines in popularity with the people and his ability to rule. In 18 to 27, David's relationship with Saul is going to pass through several stages. First, he's a member of Saul's court. Then he's going to be a fugitive, an outlaw, a mercenary. And as we begin chapter 18, these events seem to follow right after 17. And Saul doesn't allow David to go home. From this point, David's going to be pretty much a national figure. In first five verses, Saul's son, Jonathan, and David, we might say, become brothers of the heart. They love each other dearly as brothers and form a close bond. Verses 3 and 4 say they make a covenant between themselves. And Jonathan offers the robe and his armor, including sword and bow and belt, to David. The sign of friendship and devotion was a permanent gift of honor and favor. In chapter 20, we're going to see Saul condemn Jonathan for his relationship with David. As you think of Jonathan and David, if you've ever had someone you cared about that much, you know how special that relationship is. I've had, and I miss him dearly. Verse 5 makes clear that at this point, David is viewed very favorably by Saul and is given a responsibility as a soldier. He's viewed highly by the people and Saul's servants. So highly that in verses 6 through 9, the women come out and have some praise for David. A quote from William Penn, just a man, said, "The jealous are troublesome to others, but a torment to themselves." You know, Saul really grew disturbed by the comments of others. The women would sing, "Saul is slain his thousands, and David is 10,000s." In verse 8, Saul became very angry. This, he concluded that the next step for David would be to take over as king of Israel. From that time on, Saul often looked at David with anger and suspicion, and he took steps to diminish and even kill David. As we look at verse 10, it came about on the next day that an evil spirit from God came mightily upon Saul, and he raved in the midst of the house while David was playing the harp with his hand as usual. A spear was in Saul's hand, and he hurled the spear. "I'll pin David to the wall." You know, there's a growing hatred on the part of Saul toward David. Just as we saw in 1 Samuel 16, verse 14, God allowed an evil spirit to influence Saul. Saul tries to kill David. Verse 12 through 16, Saul was sane enough to understand the Lord had departed from him, as we learned in chapter 15 when Samuel told Saul to obey is better than sacrifice. Saul is sane enough to know the Lord is with David. So Saul sends David out as commander of 1,000 troops. And that's to get him out of the king's court, get him out of public eye. But despite Saul's efforts, David continues to prosper and is loved by Israel and by Judah. In verses 17 to 19, you may recall in 17:25, it will be that the king will enrich the man who kills Goliath with great riches, will give him his daughter, make his father's house free in Israel. Saul had two daughters. He offers to allow David to marry the oldest if he'll go out and fight the Philistines. Saul's hoping David's going to be killed by those Philistines. David doesn't feel worthy. Saul's motives show he's the one that's not worthy. Having promised his eldest daughter to David as his wife, Saul proves how wicked he is, and he's not honorable, as he hopes David will die. He marries that girl to another man. In verses 20 and 25, he has a second daughter who actually loves David at this point. Later on, we're going to see she's not as happy with David. But Michal loves David, when Saul hears this, he allows her to marry David. Now, David's not wealthy, so he puts a roadblock in front of him. He says, you've got to go kill 100 Philistines and bring me evidence in the form of foreskins that you've done so. So David and his men go and kill 200 men. And one commentator said, and several internet sites says, that mutilation of enemies appears to have been an ancient Near East custom. Once again, David shows himself willing to take on a difficult task at the king's direction. When he accomplishes this task, David is happy to be the king's son-in-law. He's killed twice the number of people required. The Lord is with David. Michael loves David. Saul was even more afraid of David. Thus, Saul was David's enemy continually. And the chapter closes. The commanders of the Philistines went out to battle. It happened as often as they went out that David behaved himself more wisely than all the servants of Saul, so his name was highly esteemed. David is a man worthy of our respect, a man after God's own heart. We'll study more about him in the next classes. Thank you.